Shane Willis, we have episode 188 of the Canes Cast to get into, and I just wondered, how much did you enjoy going camping?
Camping, yes. Training camp, not so much.
It is the Canes Cast brought to you by Storm Brew from R&D Brewing, where you can get Storm Brew. It is just 97 calories and 2.4 carbs, and as hockey season is here, and every season is here, rattle the chains and get ready to go and enjoy a fine Storm Brew with everything that the Canes will do this year, including training camp, which, Shane, you have just tipped us off to. Training camp, not exactly a favorite of hockey players around the world, but it is one of those necessary things, especially when you bring in some new faces. We can do story time with you, which I'd kind of be excited about. From your rookie season to your last season in the NHL, like, how does it change? What does it do? But first things first, how important is training camp to today's NHL players versus, like, when you were coming up in the league?
Well, it's definitely different because the one major difference you will see in today's game is training camp is much shorter. There are less exhibition games. There is not as much time to prepare your team, and that's what you're going to hear from Rod Brindamore all the time. He's got to get his team together. He wants to be teaching right from day one and accomplish something each and every day. But when we were back going to training camp, it was much longer. You had much more guys in camp. The duration, just the grind of training day in and day out really took a toll on guys. But again, that was a time when a lot of veteran guys really started turning up their training to get to the elite level for the start of the season. Now, everything's changed the way these guys train, and Mike, as you know, seeing these guys, they're already at elite form. They are ready for opening night if it was tomorrow, right now. They don't need training camp to get to that next level, but again, back to the systems, the structure of everything coaches want to put in, that's what training camp is used for now.
And the other side of it, too, is, as you mentioned, the teaching side of it. How much of that is actually done off of the ice now versus on the ice, you know, because there is so much video and systems and what you want to go over. And I know that we hear that term a lot, but is that maybe the biggest part where if you're Rod Brindamore, for the new guys coming in, you kind of lay down, all right, this is how we get our work done off the ice. Because on the ice, practice is pretty much practice once you get out there, right? Or am I just kind of oversimplifying that?
Yeah, I think the players know exactly what's going to happen when they get on the ice and they kind of run their patterns or get their flow going. But to me, it's a well-oiled machine on and off the ice, and Rod Brindamore and his coaching staff will have that ready to go of day one of training camp. Each day they have something that they're going to accomplish, whether it be video-wise, system-wise, the way they push and train on the ice, to what Bill Burnison does with these players in the gym afterwards to prepare them for the next day. And I think that's why the team has had success these past few years, is because they have a roadmap to follow, they stick to it, and they push their players to compete and get that level each and every day.
So if you're a team that is coming into the season like the Carolina Hurricanes, where your expectations are high, does this training camp kind of have a different meaning than, say, 3 years ago? You have a new head coach, and it's all kind of finding out, we're trying to find our way. Is there kind of a little bit more, we're not joking around, you know, we set the tone here on day one, this is our mission, we're trying to win. And I know every team says our goal is to win the Stanley Cup, but when you've been what this team has been, they got close 3 years ago with the conference finals. The last two playoff exits that they lose to, they should have beaten the Bruins. You could make the case that series was closer. Then you lose to Tampa. This team's made some changes. So kind of the focus is, like, right away, yeah, we're going to have fun. Winning is more fun than anything else. But the focus is different when you're on a good team that has those expectations versus being on a team where, you know, we're not really sure where our expectations are supposed to be.
Well, I think that's part of the excitement for this group coming together at training camp. And you talked about the changes. We talked about all the changes last show, Mike. And this group, as a player, when you come back from a tough season, obviously a good season, but not getting to where you wanted to be, you always want to look to see, what are we going to do? What changes are going to happen? As a player inside this locker room, you have to be excited with everything this organization did this summer to, again, get better as a team and provide things that you were missing last year when you made that run, eventually losing to Tampa. You didn't win the Stanley Cup. Something was missing. They went out and addressed those issues in our mind, Mike, and now you come in with that initial excitement ready to go for training camp. But then it's all about that hard work, coming together as a team with these new guys, getting the system in place, letting them know what it's all about. And then again, something that these guys know about Rod Brindamore is how much he demands and the hard work that he puts in day in and day out. And now it's up to them to keep up with the leaders of this team and push that level to the next level, Mike, if you would, because it has to go higher. You have to get better, and it starts on day one of training camp.
All right, it's training camp. If you had your pick, would you rather have training camp in the city that you play in, or let's go somewhere? And, you know, you pair off, you put roommates together, you kind of get that bonding. And we know that it's different this year. There's still a lot of protocols and things that are outside of the control of NHL clubs and teams and coaches. But for you, would you rather have gone offsite or no, keep me home, keep me around here for the, you know, 2-3 weeks that we're going to be going through training camp?
Well, I think there's pros and cons to both. I think the pros of being home, you get to sleep in your own bed, live in your own house, and find the comfort there to be able to rest and relax and do the things you want to do with your family. Going away does give you the time to start gelling together as a group, in which this team will need to do very quickly with all the new bodies and faces inside that locker room. But if I had my vote, it would be to be here in Raleigh, be in my own bed, being able to cook and eat at home, because we used to go to Fort Myers, and we were there, it felt like, for 2 months. It was 3 weeks, but it felt forever in a hotel. You know, they did a great job feeding us and preparing things, but it just gets old after a while, and you want to be into a routine, and there's no better routine than being in your own home city in training camp.
All right, so that being said, rookie Shane Willis, first training camp. I mean, is it just wide-eyed and, you know, do I belong here? Or do you got to walk in and like, no, I do belong here? Like, take us back to that first time that you walked into a training camp with the Carolina Hurricanes.
Well, let's go even further back, Mike, because my first ever training camp was with the Tampa Bay Lightning. If you remember, I was drafted twice. I thought it was so awesome. Let's do this twice and really grind a team down trying to get some more financial stability, but it didn't happen. But I go into Tampa, and yes, it was wide-eyed. We were actually in Lakeland, Florida, just outside of Orlando for training camp, a beautiful place. You've never been there, not really. In a hotel, you didn't know really what was going on. They had buses pick you up at the hotel, and you go in. But being so young in the new draft, guys, some of the veteran players were great talking to you, kind of welcome you in. But Terry Crisp was the coach, one of the happiest men you'll ever meet inside a hockey rink. Always walking to the ice, singing, jovial, ready to go, having fun. But again, you're kind of always going to the back of the line, really trying to take everything, not make a mistake. And I think you have those nerves as a rookie going into your first ever training camp. I did get smoked, which woke me up very quickly on a drill that I thought, probably not much hitting going on in this drill. Enrico Ciccone, going back in the day, decided to do one crossover and lay me out. Some of the veterans didn't find it too smart. They yelled at him, said, what are you doing? He came over and apologized to me after, but I thought, hey, this is what you're here for. This is what it's all about. And you kind of realize that this is very serious and these guys are here to compete, work hard, and your first learning lesson as a young rookie.
So you go into it. I know there's always the, and things have changed so much, how teams, like you mentioned, there used to be that, hey, rookie, we're going to initiate you into the National. This is what's going to happen, you know. You're not going to come in here and whatever, because there is, I think what people forget about with training camp too, there are jobs on the line. You know, there's a veteran player that does not want to lose his job or ice time to a young player who's coming in. So like you say, there, you've got to set this tone of we're going to be a team, but is there kind of, when do you kind of pick up on there's this internal competition where you realize, okay, this isn't what I did in juniors or this isn't when I played for a national team. There's a little bit more at stake, especially in some of those early practices where you have a veteran who might want to say, hey, I still deserve my slot, or a young guy coming up and you always hear, don't be Rudy. It's the, I know it's the college football thing, but you know, sometimes rookies got to be, hey, you know, calm down. It's not 150 miles an hour every single practice. How do you balance that? And when do you kind of figure it out? Does it take like right at day one, or does it take a couple of days to soak into it?
Well, I think right at day one, you are going 150 miles an hour and you're not handling the puck very well, so you want to settle in. But I think you have to, in your mindset, come out and show them everything you can and the reason why they selected you in the draft, because that's what they want to see. Obviously, you know you're not going to be running around doing things out of the norm against veteran players. You have that ultimate respect for them and why they're there. Now, you can see that competition going between guys, maybe third and fourth line guys who are still competing, a new guy into a lineup. You're going to see some physical nature. But again, really the players know going in, the time to shine and the time to do that is in the exhibition games against other teams. This is when you ramp it up, and if you're a physical player, you make sure the coaches know, you want me on your team because I'm going to stick up for players, I'm going to play physical, I'm going to play hard, no matter what the situation. Practice is intense, but again, that's another big reason you don't see a lot of drills where there's those opportunities to play that style. You know, skill-wise, system-wise, they get through it, they get their conditioning in, and they prepare for those exhibition games to where guys know, this is my time to go out and really try and win a job.
Now let's fast forward to veteran Shane Willis. How much different when you come in, when you kind of know you have a spot on the team, you kind of know where your place is, you know what the team dynamic is. How does that change? And this, I think this would be a great question for somebody like Sebastian Aho, but you've gone through it. When do players, you go from you're a young guy, you're just part of the team, you're trying to find your way to, now you're expected to be one of the leaders. You know, you don't have to have a letter on the sweater, but you're one of the guys who will pull a new guy, you know, under the wing and say, hey, this is how we're going to do this, or hey, don't worry about that practice. When does that change, and when did that kind of happen in your career?
Well, it's almost immediate coming in your second year. You know, the kind of your mistakes are okay, we're going to teach you, we're going to push you along, are out the window. And, you know, Paul Maurice, right from day one in that second year, knew, he's like, okay, I'm going to push you even harder this year because you've been here, you know what we expect, it's time to really get things going. And I think as a young player, and you talk about young players maturing, you have to learn that quickly. And the sooner you do learn that and you get past all those things, you now take the next step of becoming a better player. And we've seen that growth through so many young players in this organization. As you mentioned, Sebastian Aho, from year one to where he is now, he's continued to improve year in and year out. And part of that maturity and that growth of coming to the rink, and when you step on the ice every day for practice, you are going all out. There's never a day off. You are always trying to improve and work on different things. And we hear the coaches talk about Sebastian's defensive game and how much better it has become now that he's killing penalties, he's a leader on the ice. And your confidence continues to grow as a young player. And the guys who get it stay in this league for a long time, and they continue to thrive year in and year out. And it's part of that, I think, that the veteran guys tell the young players. They're like, watch what this guy is doing. And the sooner you can realize that's the way it has to go, the longer career you're going to have.
How much, and you know, I think we've heard this before, but how much do you learn just by sitting back and watching, like, how a veteran goes about his business? Like, when you got to Carolina, Ron Francis is in the room, right? You know, Eric Cole is in the room. Then Rod is in the room. How do you kind of go in and be like, I'm going to watch that guy, I'm going to watch everything he does because this is the career that he has. And you know, if he tapes his stick this way, he does this. If he drinks his coffee that way, I'm going to do that. Is there part of that for a young guy when you get in the room, especially when you have players of that character, of that caliber? You kind of, I don't want to say you get starstruck, but you kind of go in the, I'm going to watch everything that guy does and just try to soak it in.
Yeah, there's no question. But then you also have to find what works for you. Right, Ron Francis, as you mentioned, a Hall of Famer, an elite player, the vision, the hands, totally different way he acted and trained compared to Rod Brind'Amour. Yeah. But as a young player, you know, well, I can't act like Ron Francis. I don't have that.
Yeah.
But then on the flip side, you look at Rod and the way he trained and the way he pushes, and you're thinking, you know, as a young 24, 23-year-old, you're like, well, I can't train like that either because that will take me out of my element. You have to find your niche and what works for your game. And I think all those guys, though, you want to take a little bit from each and every one of those players and find what you can fit into your game and utilize that to become the best player you can.
So if you had sage advice now, I still think that you could snipe, especially the way the game is played now. You could probably get out there and get 15 on the power play. But do you have any advice for, like, the younger guys who are out there who come in? You know, if somebody was to seek counsel of Shane Willis and be like, all right, it's my first training camp. You pull somebody aside and say, what you just said is perfect. You got to do you. You try to figure out, you know, all right, I'm going to watch this guy and watch that guy. But what's the piece of advice, or if there is one that you'd give, or maybe a best one that was given to you for this time of year specifically?
Attitude is everything. Because the biggest thing as a young player, even if you're a first-round pick, if you come in with a bad attitude or a cocky attitude, it immediately rubs the coaches and the players the wrong way. Because guess what? You don't know everything. You have never played in this league. You have never been to a training camp. And what you've done in junior, guess what? Doesn't work here. So come in, and again, everyone who meets a hockey player after they've been in the league a long time, they're like, you guys are the most humble people ever. The young player then come in, humble, ask questions, be respectful, yep, have a smile on his face. I mean, the guy that jumps out to me is Steven Lorenz. When you watch this kid in every interview he did with us last year on Bally Sports, that's the attitude coaches and players are drawn to. They don't want the arrogant first overall pick coming in and say, I'm going to snipe 30 this year, just give me the puck. That's not what they want. The attitude of Steven Lorenz, yep, Andrei Svechnikov, Sebastian Aho, of having a desire to come in and work and hate to lose is exactly what they want to see. And that's what I would tell a player. I'm like, I can't tell you anything about your skill. Your skill will shine because that's the natural ability and why you've been selected. The other part of the game is what you have to learn. Buy into everything Bill Bernestin. Bill Bernestin is one of the most energetic guys, if you ever get a chance to talk to him, especially if you're in a gym that makes you want to start working out, even if you've never worked out before. But they want buy-in, and guys like that you have to listen to and gel with right away. So that's what I say. Open your ears and have a great attitude every single day you walk in, no matter what. No matter what round you've been drafted in, that's what they want to see when you come inside that locker room.
All right, three things Shane Willis is looking for in training camp this year for this team. Let's go specifically to this team now. We've kind of addressed the overall look at it, but what are you looking for out of training camp? Because if anybody has the eye of, hey, this is – you know, don't focus on this. You know, people look at wins and losses to me in any preseason of any sport are irrelevant. It's how you play and certain players, how they play. But what are the three specific things that you're going to kind of be focusing on with this team and say, all right, we'll know where the start of the season is going to go based off of this?
Well, number one, I'm going to watch these young players, right? Jarvis, Drury, you know, what do these guys do? Because these first few exhibition games, you're going to see a lot of youthful players in the Hurricanes lineup. You're not going to see the veterans rolling out there and going 100 miles an hour. You're going to see these young players. This is their time. This is their time to shine and see what they have. So I really want to see if there's one of these players you can say, wow, a year from now, does he get some games this year? 2 years from now, what this young man could be doing in this lineup with this team. After that goes by and you start seeing the veterans in this lineup, the second thing I'm going to look for is the chemistry in your forward lines. Because to me, coming out of the gates and putting pucks in the back of the net, if you can see chemistry between 3, 6, 9 players that are really rolling in exhibition, look out because the start is going to be unbelievable. The third and final point, when you watched the Carolina Hurricanes play the Tampa Bay Lightning last year, and the forecheck is something we talk about all the time, the one thing Tampa combated the forecheck with was physicality. And something to me the Hurricanes lacked on their defensive end was that physical edge. We talk about addressing that over the summer. The guys you now have brought in can bring that. And I want to see if the 6-7 core defensemen that this team now puts on the ice take it up another notch. And so teams know when they come in, they're like, ooh, things got a little more difficult, yeah, to play against the Carolina Hurricanes. We can't just forecheck, get bumped into the glass. We know it's going to be a grind as the Hurricanes forwards faced last year against the Tampa Bay Lightning.
So, I mean, those are three things that are right there. When you talk about chemistry, though, on the forward lines, if you're Rod Brind'Amour, do you kind of go into training camp this year? Because he knows, certainly, stock what he has with probably 9 of his forwards, of what they should do, what I expect from them, what they can do. Not saying that there's, you know, 3 that they don't know what they want, but you bring in a Jesperi Kotkaniemi, as we talked about, so he's got to find a role. I was wondering if this training camp is more, instead of going, all right, we're going to put this line together, and roll with that, you can experiment a little bit more this preseason of, all right, I'm going to put this, you go duos, maybe not lines, I'm going to put this guy with this guy and see if I like that. And you don't have to be married to it. You don't have to say this is what we're going to do, but maybe more of that experimentation. And I'm going to watch the goalies. I want to see how Freddie Anderson and Antti Raanta do with this defensive core in front of them. You know, they don't have to get a shutout every time, but, You know, that's one of the curious things for me to see how they're going to play behind this group that's here. Those were the two things that I was going
to
look at.
Yeah, I agree with you up front. You have to obviously look for that chemistry, but you know the way Rod and Jeff Daniels look at these forwards and how well they feel the game. We've talked about that all the time. The feel that these guys have in a game to switch up one guy, maybe two guys, and all of a sudden, whoa, there it goes again.
Yeah.
Right? You have to have that feel, and that's what makes a great coach and a great coaching staff. And these guys obviously have that. We've seen that over the past few years. So I think you're going to see a bunch of different lineups, some chemistry in different ways. You may see a guy like Derek Stepan get a chance with somebody and him catch fire.
Yep.
Because I can tell you, most goal scorers, and again, there are the elite that score all the time in the National Hockey League. You have a small handful that is consistent. But I will tell you, most goal scorers are streaky. So when you get on a streak, who are you playing with?
Yep.
You may not stay with them for 82 games, but you get on that streak, you ride that hot streak, as you and Tripp all do all the time in Vegas when you ride the hot streak.
One of us, not the other.
You have to stay there and keep those lines together and then switch it up. That's just part of the season and part of the grind, I think, not only for the players but for the coaching staff to find.
Yeah, by the way, Tripp blames me for the cold streaks, and I don't blame him for that either. I'm not the cooler per se, but that's kind of when – that's the interesting thing for me. Like, do you catch something when you played in exhibition? I know nobody goes onto the ice and is like, oh, I don't want to get hurt. You know, you can't play like that. You got to play the game. But when you went on the ice, were you kind of cognizant of, you know, if Paul Maurice moved you up and down the line, like, oh, I'm, you know, with this guy, not saying that you weren't trying hard with somebody else, but you're like, oh, I'm playing with this group, or I'm playing here, or I'm getting first power play minutes right now. Does it kind of change the juice, the energy you have? And can you do that? Do you kind of want, if you're a coach, because I know that your coaching now is a little different when you're coaching youth, but I'm going to throw somebody out there and see if they get a little bit more of a spark if I put him with these guys, or he sparks these guys if I put him with, you know, that duo or this back end, all these combinations. I mean, people think it's just simple, you throw it out there, but there's so much that goes into it that you're looking for, right?
Well, I think at the NHL level, it's probably even harder because you have so many different players and characters on your team of, you have to know how that affects them. Because yes, there's no question, some players, you move them and all of a sudden it's a spark plug and they're all of a sudden going 100 miles an hour. Now you might not do that to another player, and you know, you see their shoulders slump and you're like, oh, I just killed him, you know. But you have to be behind that player, and I think that's the best part about this coaching staff, is they know how much they are behind them. No matter where they move, they still believe in them. They're not moving them out of disrespect or distrust.
Yeah.
They're looking for that spark. And I think players here know that. And that's why they love playing on this team, no matter who's getting sent over the boards. And as you mentioned, with youth players, it's a little bit harder because you have to have, we're at practice is there a night, and you still, at the kids are 13 years old, Justin Williams and my son, and explaining the drill to them. And you can see it. They're like, oh, that's why we're doing it. You know? And I said, when we skate, we're not skating out of punishment. We're skating to get you physically to another level. And they're like, oh, because kids will ask, why are we skating? Are we in trouble? No, you're not in trouble. You know, we're trying to get you to another level. And I think, you know, that happens even at the NHL level, because when guys get moved around, you can see the next day, if you come and watch practice, you can see coaches skating beside a guy and having a conversation. That's what they're talking about. Here's what I saw in last night's game. I didn't see you going. I moved you here. This is why. Today you're back with these guys. Let's get it going again, to pick them back up. And that's, again, what makes great coaches.
All right. Also, for people who are tuning into CanesCast Shane .0, as Shane Willis is now the official co-host of this fine podcast brought to you by Storm Brew, R&D Brewing. Thank you very much. We need to work on making sure that we get a fine supply of that too, Shane, to help us.
Yeah,
just like players, you know, little motivation in the paycheck for us, and we can share, which, by the way, we will also announce the winner of the Shane Willis Trivia Contest.
Oh, yeah.
Coming up later on in the show. We found somebody dug through the archives and found out the one time that you put out Jack Johnson and Tom O'Leary.
That's not what mine are called.
Well, nonetheless, we'll get to that coming up in a minute. But for people who don't know, I am old and Shane is young. So there's this thought process for hockey when we talk about lines and combinations that, kind of like my era, is it's always trios. It's center with right and left wing, and that's how it is. And, you know, and I think part of it too is through hockey history, one of the things we love to talk about is, you know, the great lines that have played before. You know, there was the BBC line with you know, Battaglia, Brendan Moore, and Cole in that great run to the Stanley Cup Finals for the Canes, and you know, the 0-2, that 0-2 playoff against Detroit. You know, people love, you know, there's a French Connection in Buffalo, and then you can run down the, I mean, so many great, the Legion of Doom in Philadelphia.
That was a good line too.
It was a good line where, what, Renberg, Lindros, and LeClaire. I mean, so people like it fascinating. Oh, you got to keep lines. It's these lines together. But it's really, it's not about that anymore today. And really, it hasn't been about lines for a really long time, right?
It really hasn't. I mean, it just kind of comes in waves, as you mentioned now in today's game. And it's funny, again, as a player, when you talk about attitude, but you also have to have an open mind. Like, you can sit there and say, I need to be playing with this guy.
Yeah.
But that also hurts your game playing with another guy because you're so close-minded, you're not giving it a chance.
Yeah.
And this centerman could compliment you so much more. And I go back to, I talk about this a lot these past few days because everyone's like, is Svech going to play with Aho and Teravainen? Yeah. Maybe. But again, some of the best games that Andre played last year were on the left wing with Jordan Staal. And you can't discount some of those games and what Jordan did, the energy and the way he played last year. I mean, that was such a good year for Jordan Staal. Sometimes you're sitting in the locker room as a winger and be like, man, I want to play with that guy tonight because he is going. You could see who's going, and you might just play better with them. But you have to have that open mindset. And as a fan, you can't say, they must play these three together
exactly
all the time, because guess what? When they're ice cold, and you know, you talk about being in Vegas on a cooler, you don't sit at the table until you're broke.
No.
You get up and walk away.
Wait a minute. That's how that's supposed to go?
I don't know. I've never been. You guys don't ever invite me. I really have never been to Vegas.
You're always welcome.
I wish I could go. But that's the thing. You have to be open-minded. You have to be as a player. And I think that's what we talk about all the time, the mental grind,
yep,
of the things you think about as a player day in and day out. When you walk in the room, you kind of peek at your locker to see what jersey's hanging there. Who am I playing with?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm on the fourth line tonight. Oh, I'm on the first line. You know, how that affects you and what you do day in and day out.
Yeah, and again, I'm glad that you brought that up because, look, if I'm a fan, I want to see Svechnikov, Aho, and Teravainen, the S18 line. I want to see that. But maybe the best thing for the team is Andre that night. And I think when you get locked into lines and then when you mix them up, and everybody, oh, well, why did you take that guy away from this line? And I don't think that you can look at it like that anymore. And I actually think the teams that are really good are the teams that can interchange parts when they need to. But, all right, we need to get going. We go with this combination. We go with that combination. We put this together and go from there. So that's some of the things that you look for and get into. Now, as a player, you guys say a lot of stuff. I go back to it. So much is cliche. Nobody wants to say anything. And you mentioned hockey players are really humble. So I might believe this more if I ask you for hockey players than if this was another sport. But, you know, NHL Network comes out with their rankings. You know, Hockey News comes out with rankings, the top 100 players, all this. Do players peak? Take a look, see where they're at. And, you know, in this case, Sebastian Aho jumps up 8 spots from last year. He's goes from 29 to 21. So he's, according to the experts, he is the 21st best player in the National Hockey League. Not center, but best player. And if you were wondering, that guy in Edmonton is number one. He's pretty good.
He is fast.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Well,
but do players, is it, I'm asking you, and I know this might be taboo, and I do not want to get you in trouble with the room or any of the guys you played with, but you always get the stock answer, nah, I don't care, I don't care, I don't really watch. That doesn't matter to me. I might buy it doesn't matter to you. I might buy that you don't care, but I don't know if I ever buy, I don't read that stuff or I didn't know about that. Like, guys, you kind of want to know, right? You kind of want to see where you fit in the pecking order or what the outside thinks of how you play the game, right?
There's no question. If players didn't care, we wouldn't keep stats. Now, I can tell you this locker room is driven towards one thing, and that's winning the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
So that is every team's ultimate goal. But these kind of rankings and these numbers for a player like Sebastian Aho, and one of the nicest people you'll ever meet, and when you talk about humble, Sebastian Aho,
yep,
his biggest thing is he hates to lose. What this does for a player, because he's seen it, does he look at it? Sure. Does he sit there and stick his chest out? No chance. But it does give him what I would say as a team, this is awesome, because you know what? This is going to give Sebastian Aho some more confidence to go out there and continue to be like, hey, I'm 21st. I want to be inside the top 15.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's what these players look at. I mean, Connor McDavid, sure, he looks at it. But again,
these are things these guys utilize as driving forces in their game to continue to push there, because you don't want to be ranked number 10th and then go out and score 5 for the whole year.
Yeah.
But they definitely see him. They're happy about it.
Yeah.
But they always want more.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you have to have.
I kind of bring that up along the lines of, I don't think anybody looks at that and is like, oh, I'm going to show you, or, you know, it's number one. I've got to prove that. It's just always, to me, if it's out there, somebody's going to bring it up to you, right? I mean, and maybe it's in the – maybe a guy in the locker room would be like, 21, huh? What's up, 2-1? You know, because they could throw things like that. Hey, Sebastian, they got your number wrong. I thought you wore 20, you know, things like that. I just often wonder, though, because there is one stat that I know that the guys do look at, the standings. Like, that's the one thing when we don't look at it. Everybody looks at the standings because you see what happened the night before. You see where you're at. It gets a little bit more crucial. But I always wonder, like, that it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter if somebody is ranked 1 or 101, but I just always wonder if the, you know, the guys are curious. They flip through and say, oh, hey, this is where we saw you, or this is where you're at.
I think you look at it more as a young rookie because you want to see where you're comparing against all the rookies in the league before you get up. These guys who have been around, I mean, we know Sebastian Aller is going to be consistent from year to year with what the amount of points he gets. He doesn't need to look to see where he lands. But as you said, they see it, but it's just another thing that drives these guys to become better. And everyone in the league, if you ask any player who's the best player in the league, they're going to say Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
And that's the standard. And so what do they all think about? How do I get there?
Yeah.
What is he doing that I can maybe do on or off the ice to make my game more like his? Because he is a phenomenal player and should be at number one, no question.
All right. Well, we've got some questions from people on Twitter. We're going to work the phones. We're going to get that
back
up.
Work the phones, yeah.
We're going to get that back up and working. There's a few technical issues. It's the reason why this podcast is coming out on Friday instead of its usual Wednesday, amongst a few other things. But yeah. We do have Twitter questions, Shane.
And, sweet.
I will handle these because I have already shut down the, does this mean Shane's getting on Twitter? No. He's not getting
on
Twitter.
That's why I have you, Michael.
Exactly. I'm fine with this. So.
First, no, I've never been inside the top 100 of players. No. Was that the question?
First, and that's why those lineups, those.
Yeah, those rankings mean nothing.
In the words of Ray Whitney, that's why they're a joke. It's a joke. It's ridiculous. So this question from at Tubbied. Apart from injury, guys, I don't see any young fellows coming up this season. Do you see guys in any way coming up, or do we just seem to be too late, too loaded to make room? And it's funny you talked about it in the three things you're watching. You mentioned Seth Jarvis. You mentioned Jack Drury. You know, there's Ryan Suzuki. There's players that you're looking at who are going to get a look, but the way this team is constructed, I just don't see development-wise putting a young guy on the roster if he's not going to play.
That is a huge, huge part of all of that when you look at training camp and where a young guy is going to fit in. If you are rebuilding and you have plenty of spots where players are going to play 15, 16 minutes a game, yes, you're going to give a young guy an opportunity to play. But as you said, this team is built with veteran players, high-end skill, one-way contracts that doesn't leave many doors open for these young players. Training camp's still a huge part for them to come out and show this organization and these guys. But I can say Ryan Wolfsovsky and Pat Dwyer in Chicago are ready to do an excellent job in continuing to develop these young players. So as you mentioned, probably not if, but when injuries or guys are banged up and they need some players to step in, you'll get an opportunity to see really how well this scouting staff and these draft picks that we have made really come to the forefront and what they bring.
So I don't want to predict anything, but this is probably going to be a year where the young guys, you want them, like you said, stay in Chicago, develop there, you know, dominate down there, put up a big number there. And then next year, because there's another question that kind of funnels into this, next year those guys will be ready to play because you have that extra year of growth, of adding muscle, of learning how to be a pro. And then you can step in. Does it make that transition to the NHL a little bit easier when you do have some guys jump into the pool right away? But for some guys, you know, that little extra seasoning can make a big difference.
Well, and the one thing, again, I talk about Rod and his coaching staff and his organization
all the time and how much I love the way they do things. And as you look at this training camp and as guys come in, and I was listening to Rod talk the other day, and he basically said, you know, we're going to be honest with these guys. Like, there's no reason in putting a smoke screen up and say, hey, you know, we're going to be watching you tonight. Yep. You're gonna, you know, we're going to be honest. Be like, hey, you're going to be Chicago this year. We want to see what you do here this week in camp. We want you to do all these things correctly and be ready at any moment. And as a young player, mentally, that helps you so much to start gelling with the guys that are going to be in Chicago. Two great coaches, Pat Dwyer, a guy who's been in the National Hockey League, who's been inside this locker room, to prepare you for that chance. Because, again, development is such a huge part of it, to get you ready to not come up and go back. Everything a coach does in the American Hockey League is for you to go up and for him to never see you again. And that's what will make him a great coach.
So to that end, we've kind of answered this, but Owen Anderson throws this one out. Owen P. Anderson. With many of the depth signings for the Canes being made 1 year, does that signal the front office believes the young players are a year away before they can make an impact?
I think so. I think when you look at these players, everything they've done, they've started getting ready. Jack Drury played in Europe last year. So I think being here and being in Chicago will help him, again, system-wise, getting used back to the American game, smaller rink, those type of things. Seth Jarvis, still remember, extremely young. I don't like the situation. That's not to anyone's fault that Seth Jarvis is going to have to go back to junior this year.
Yeah, it's just the rules.
His skill level is definitely professionally ready. But again, the rules of not being 20 years of age, you got to go back to junior. So that's a tough situation for him. But everyone else I see being in the proper position to go. Now, again, we talk about Jack Drury. He played in Europe last year. He played a professional game there last year. Could he compete with the young Steven Lorenz? Steven Lorenz knows he's got to come in and show. His attitude is where they need him to be, but he needs to play really the way he did against the Tampa Bay Lightning. I thought he did an outstanding job with the minutes he got and what his line did to contribute there in the playoffs. So he's one of those guys, you still have to come in and show it. Rod Brindamore's not going to give you a handout. Everyone needs to come in and earn their job.
Here's a good question. This is from Josh. We hear the term poor skater or some variation of that. What makes a player a poor skater, and how much can a player do to really improve their skating once they get to the NHL level?
That is a great question, because you'll hear scouts in meetings or evaluations of players that come to the forefront a lot. They can't skate. Well, what do you mean he can't skate? Just watch them go up and down the ice. To me, they're looking at one thing. It's his speed and his agility of the game. Can he keep up and play at a pace that they want? We know Coach Brindamore wants to play a high-paced game. There is no waiting around. There is no coasting. There is no gliding. The forecheck is about pace. The backcheck is about hustle and pace. The pressure in the D-zone is about pace. And you can see when you're watching these players in practice or in scrimmages, the guys that maybe have a step slow. Now, can you work on it? Great question. Yes, you can. Some of those things are technique, that there are so many great skaters around and technology to help these guys learn their edges, working on those things better. Some of it also transitions to off ice.
Yeah.
Things Bill Burnison can provide you to have more explosive muscle twitch, those kind of things that you may not be working on or training with, can help you as a young player to get better. Now, again, the game has changed so much, so what you've done, if you haven't been training that way since you've been 15, 16, 17, you're going to be behind the eight ball, but yes, you can make it and get into a situation. Now, the other part you want to remember too, Josh, not every team may see you like that. It's no different than being in Jesperi Kotkaniemi to North Carolina. The Carolina Hurricanes see a huge value in Jesperi. The Montreal didn't have him valued that high. So those are other situations. Although one team may say, well, you know what? He's a step slow. Someone may be sitting at their draft table being like, let's take this guy. We're all in. So again, there's 32 teams in the league. Everyone ranks and views players similarly, but also differently before they select them.
You know, this is a good question, because there's so many offshoots to this, Shane. And when you hear, you know, oh, he's slow, or he's, you know, a poor skater, you see those scattering reports that come out there. But if you can put yourself in the right places, if you can get there, Like, that makes up for it. The intelligence of being able to read a play and get to those spots. The curious thing to me, you hear all the power skating that you can have in the off season and those things. Can you get faster as you are? I think when you talk about those formative years, 15, 16, 17, I think you can because you're still developing, you're still growing, you can train yourself to get there. But for a guy who's like 25, 26, and the book is, this is as fast as he's going to go, can you find a way to get faster where it's noticeable?
Yeah, age is definitely the difference maker, right? And definitely the part that's going to hurt you as you get older. Now, the part of the thing you could do in speaking with teams, if you're not fast enough to play in a certain role, change your role, right? But as a player, you have to be ready to buy into that. Yeah. If you want to put on 5-6 more pounds of muscle and you become a penalty killer and a ball of physical presence out there.
Or in Kotkaniemi's case, move out to the wing and buy into being a winger.
Correct.
Because that's going to get you to where you need to go for the rest of the game.
Correct. So putting him there, learning the game or learning the system, which may open it up for him into an easier game and become more talented or even more effective in the offensive zone. But so many factors. Again, it's funny when you hear those things, or even another one you hear around the hockey world is, well, he can only play in the top six. He can't play in the bottom. What does that mean? If he's one of your best six players, but you're saying maybe he's number seven, he can't play on the bottom two lines? But that is something I've heard for a long time. Something I heard about myself is, well, if he's not in the top six, he can't play. That makes zero sense to me. But it's the way the game was when I played. It was, our third line is going to be checking and grinding.
Yep.
Our fourth line is only going to play 5 minutes, so why do we want him to sit there? And he's not going to kill penalties. So if he's on the power player in the top six, he's not effective for us or useful at that time.
Yeah, and again, it goes back to, there are a lot of players in this league that you go back to some scouting reports, and when you read can't skate or won't get there, there's a certain guy, 99. They knew he could play really well, but the knock was skating.
Yeah,
I mean, he turned out
pretty good.
Yeah, he was I'm pretty sure they didn't think he was the fastest skater, and well, that would have been a concern in the National League.
And the other part you have is you can't. Let's go back to our age, Mike. Remember the old first Nintendo hockey game that came out?
Oh yeah,
and you could either select the skinny guy, the medium guy, or the big guy.
Yeah, so they could select the skinny guy, they could select Shane, or they could select me.
Right.
And the me couldn't skate, but he had a hell of a shot and could hit people.
You could score from anywhere.
Yes, I could.
And that's the part about putting together a great team. You have to have multiple pieces.
Exactly.
And what pieces fit in with attitude, with skill, with grit, that takes you to the next level. You can't have 20 super fast, speedy, skilled guys.
Yeah.
Number one, your salary cap can't afford it.
Yeah.
So what players do you put around your eliteness to complement them and to buy into a system to win a Stanley Cup?
All right, let's get to a fashion question from Howie. Thoughts on making the thirds the primary, and the primary the thirds, meaning the black jerseys with the double warning flag, the logo we have right here, making that the home jersey or the primary jersey, and then making the reds the third?
I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to
Wait, were you turning this into one of these right now?
If you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
Yeah, I'm going to take it. And let me just throw another twist into this question. I was talking to my son, Lakin, the other night about this, and he was talking about jersey colors and being at home, and I was trying to remember when they switched, because in my day, we wore the whites at home.
I know, I love the whites at home.
So I'm trying to think to myself of, when is the NHL, or has this conversation come up? Because I want to say it's probably been about 15 years, 12 years.
Maybe a little longer.
Since they went to the darks at home?
Maybe a little longer. All right, hang on. Let me.
We're going to Google this quickly, yeah, but I'm going to keep talking. I would like to see that. I mean, I love the new white jerseys. I think our fans would enjoy seeing those a little bit more at home, seeing some of the dark colors come here.
18 years, 2003-04 season. NHL teams typically wear the dark color at home, and they'll wear the white for the road games.
So I'm going to put a loony on this, that at year 20, this switches back.
I'm in. I'm down with that.
So
maybe it's because I grew up with it, because I liked seeing.
Yeah.
I like seeing the home whites just look clean, crisp. And then I always like seeing the other teams.
Right. So it's been 18 years. I say in 20 years, they make the switch back. So we'll see potentially the whites at home. And I don't disagree with you that just move the black jersey that everyone loves so much. And hey, I'm not going to lie to you, the Canes have a fairly good record at wearing those jerseys throughout the years.
From 1970 till the 2003 season, the NHL wore white at home. So, I mean, that's a long time there, Shane. That was 30 years. So
yeah, but I think that idea came up and everyone's like, oh, we never thought about that.
Yeah.
So let's keep it. Let's go 20 years, everybody. All right. I'll send a note to the NHL.
And by the way, I will take that as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, every 20 years, just switch it up.
Switch it back.
You know, that way it keeps things a little bit more interesting. We do have Ed had a question. Actually, he has multiple questions, as you'll figure this out on Twitter. But basically, he had 1, 2, and 3 for you, but we already answered them because we were talking about training camp at the start of the day, and basically it's everything that we had there. Although, I mean, I could get this in. What was the one thing you loved and then the one thing you hated about training camp? Which he put that as one question, but that's really two questions.
It is two questions.
Yeah, he tries to sneak those in there.
The one thing I loved about training camp, I think just getting everyone back together. Again, we were in Fort Myers, Florida in a hotel, so being around all the guys that you haven't seen all summer that you played with the year before. So having that initial excitement of the season coming back. The part I disliked the most was probably the testing. It's just the day you dread the most. You know you're trained and you're in shape and you're ready to go, but it's just one of those days that you're like, can this just be over? Because you don't want to grind more on the bike. You don't want to run anymore. I hated running. Like, I still hate it. I don't run. I run. If you see me walk, you're like, oh, he's pretty heavy-footed. If you see me run, you hear me coming. And I'm sore the next day. It's not fun. And when I got traded to Tampa, one of their tests was a 3-mile jaunt.
Oh, golly.
It was the worst. In the first year I was there to do it, what happens in Florida in the afternoon? Afternoon, rain and lightning storms. We had to do it in a gym. It was like 48 laps around this gym. Like, you're on a corner the whole time. And I remember finishing and going, I didn't have a good day. I mean, it stunk. I remember walking out and John Torrell looks at me and goes, you don't like running, do you, Willie? And I'm like, no, I hate it. So the next year I go back. I remember training the next year. I'm like, well, I'm going to kill this year. And I was running all the time and just trying to stretch more and just icing my knees because it was brutal. And so I go to do the run. And I remember getting on the bus to go. Luckily, it wasn't raining. It was going to be outdoor on a track. And I'm like, perfect, 12 laps. That's all I got to do. And so on the way there, all you gym rats from back in the day, I chugged a speed stack. And this thing was like Red Bull on crack. And so I drank this on the bus. I walked out on the track, and I looked around, and I looked at Pavel Kubina. I said, Pav, how fast are you running this? Because I needed a pace car. And he goes, I don't know, 21 minutes maybe? I said, okay, I'm going to stay with you. He goes, okay. I was so close to Pavel Kubina that after the run was over, Craig Ramsey, the assistant coach, goes, Willie, I couldn't even see you out there. You were so close to Pav. I said, I was in his back pocket. And then I did the worst, like the meanest thing ever you could do to a teammate. We come around it, and he was my pace car. It was literally I was riding his back. Final lap, blew past him.
Oh, slingshot engage. You went shake and bake?
He got without to the him end knowing and looked it? At me. He goes, you ass. I don't know if we can say that on the podcast.
Yes, you
I
can. Did. Yeah, that one's we're okay.
But it was the funniest thing. And
I can't believe it. Couldn't
sleep that night. The speed stack didn't wear off. I don't know what time.
I just love that you dragged behind him the entire thing. You let him cut the wind, and then bam, you leave him in the dust.
Oh, I took off like a bullet.
that's a great story. So, yeah, good for you. By the way, that's working smarter, not harder.
That's right.
Good for you. What was the best thing that you watched this summer? I'm trying to think
the Olympics.
Yeah, the Olympics were pretty good. Yeah, they were better than I thought they were going to be.
You're not a big TV guy. I watched the Olympics, though.
I watched a couple of movies, but nothing stands out. Like, you know.
No. I had slow summer on the TV.
Yeah.
Movie train.
Really was.
There's a lot of things people tell me to check out, and I just don't. I'm an early to bed kind of guy and up early. I just don't like to lay around and watch TV till midnight.
I am not an early. It doesn't matter what time I go to bed. I am not an early riser. I mean, I could go to bed at 9 o'clock, and I'm like, nope.
I love it. I love getting up when no one's awake.
If I look out and like the sun's not up, I'm like, nope, no reason for me to be up. No reason to get this thing out of bed.
This is not supposed to be happening.
Not happening. But now I'm trying to think, like, if there was any. No, nothing really stands out that was really, yeah, you got to go watch it, or oh, that made my summer. I did fly out to California and watched a couple of movies and things I hadn't seen, but nothing really great. to stand out. There you go. Also, last week, Shane Willis put out a prize. I found the original winner. Remember I told you I couldn't find the original name? I do. I have it right here. Philip Hetzler, he came in like right after the show and knew that Shane fought Olli Jokinen on 9/19/2000 in the preseason. And there is a certain website. I'll give them the plug, but there's no video of this.
No.
But it's called hockeyfights.com. And I know that some people think it's barbaric, and I'm not saying, oh, you got to go. But it's a good reference for, like, hey, this happened, that happened. It has the record of you fighting Olli Jokinen, but it does not have the video of it.
Fort Myers, Florida. I don't think there was but a few thousand people in the building. It was in the corner. My roommate from the minor leagues and junior, Byron Ritchie, had just got into one, and Olli and I had kind of tied up in the corner, jabbing away at each other. And after we were standing there watching my good friend Byron's fight, he kind of looked at me, and the punches, of course, always get a little bit harder as you're jabbing each other. And he saw one go, and he looked at me as the linesman was taking him off the ice. And he looked at me and said, give it to him, Willie. So we threw down. We wrestled a little bit. Not sure if there was any punches really landed. I'd say probably one or two by both. Then we hit the showers. It was a great day in training camp.
There you go. So, Philip Hetzler, congratulations. We're going to get some kind of
prize pack.
Prize appreciation pack out to you. We will work on some giveaways as we can go. Apologies to Jared Sheffett, who came in just a few days later with the winning answer for that. So, but Jared, you get your name mentioned on the podcast, and really, can you ask for anything more than that?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
We'll come up with a few more contests over the years.
We will. We'll get a couple squared away. So it's all set. It's where we're at. It's what we do. I did have if you like it, you can take it. But I like the jersey question. It's good to go. So I was going to say my question for you. And
if you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
Will we see a surprise name crack the Canes roster after training camp? Meaning it was like one of the young guys. Because we were kind of set up for this. And you can send it back just because I think we've already covered it. That's why that was the one that I came in with. Because there's usually, as you know, every year there's always one guy who makes the decision in a good way, makes the decision difficult on a coaching staff to say we got to send him back.
Yeah, he really does. I mean, I'm going to send it back just because of all the additions. And again, from a business standpoint, I know how this works when you look at the one-way contracts that are on this roster right now that are very difficult to really not send down but to move. I'm going to give you a little one guy to watch, outside shot, guy who really looks good. If you see him walk in the rink, you'd be like, this guy looks like he's ready to go. On the back end, played over in Europe, Eric Jelena. Just keep an eye on him. Watch what he does. See if you like his game. Looks good right now.
Look at that. Blue Horseshoe loves Eric Jelena.
Yeah.
Well done.
Played, I don't know if they're related. I don't think so. Marty Jelena, what a great man. Left winger with Rod Brindamore and myself back in the day.
Scored a couple of big goals in his career.
He really did.
Actually, didn't he score the winner for Calgary, and they said it wasn't in the Stanley Cup Finals?
That is controversial.
I don't want to bring that. You don't bring that up in Alberta.
No, that one still burns in Calgary. Pungent to the nostrils, as they say.
As well it should. If we could, we need to. The world got a little less funny this week as we say goodbye to a outstanding hockey fan and Canadian, born in Quebec City, Norm MacDonald.
It was a tough day this week to lose Norm. I mean, some of the skits, and it's so great to hear, as you said, podcasters' stories of guys that worked with him, the stories they tell.
Yep.
I mean, are just amazing. And then you see the old skits. I still quote and utilize some of the things that he said when he was on Celebrity Jeopardy. I mean, all the time do I quote the things he said.
Did I have to introduce you as Turd Ferguson today instead of Ferguson. Shane Willis?
I got this cowboy hat in the back. It's oversized. Why are you wearing it? Well, it's funny.
My favorite in the same episode on that one is sounds a dog he makes. He rings in and goes, Scooby-Doo, funny dog. Drove around in a van, solved mysteries. And to which Farrell played that perfect. He goes, no, that's wrong. No, that's right. Pretty sure had a pal named Scrappy too.
Oh man, he was he was one of the original best comedians there was out there.
Yeah, and look, I get that he wasn't like always everybody's cup of tea because he was kind of dry. He told a joke when I was younger, and I don't know why it made me laugh so much, but he was talking about the Olympics, and he goes, you know, now the Olympics are just trying to put things together that don't kind of make sense, like run a 100-yard dash and then fish. And that's just how he delivered it. And I mean, I didn't do it any justice, but how he delivered it, I remember that forever. And now you watch certain sporting events, it's the extreme whatever games.
It really is.
So
I still don't understand the steeplechase.
Yeah, I don't even.
You're running around, and then all of a sudden you just have to jump a massive barrier and land in a puddle.
Once again, it involves running. No.
Yeah, that's true. But a great man. Norm MacDonald. One thing I heard this week on the news, they were talking about, they were talking with some of his family members, and no one knew he had cancer.
Yeah.
And when he was diagnosed, it was the first thing that he told his family. He wanted no one to know because they didn't want to look at him differently or treat him differently. Utmost respect for that and the way Norm MacDonald brought so many laughs to our lives.
Yeah, and he had a great line about it, and this is for people who are out there who are in that fight against cancer. He hated the term, you know, so-and-so lost their battle. And then he came up with, he goes, well, you know, when you have cancer, the cancer goes with you. So that's a draw. So Norm MacDonald got a draw in his bout with cancer this
draw.
Week. So.
And we definitely think about all those people in that fight.
Yep.
Because it is a fight, and what you do day in and day out to fight it is amazing.
Yep. How you live, that's the fight. So continue with that, and again, we appreciate everybody for checking into the Canes Cast. Shane, 2 in the books right now.
Are you going to run in the 5K?
Nothing. Nothing in my family runs, just so you know. I will be there, though.
I'm going to ride a golf cart.
There will be the Canes 5K coming up this Sunday. I will be emceeing it. And evidently, there's some kind of plastic bubble that I will be a Pope Mobile thing
of
sorts. I don't know. I've been hearing things.
I just think it's a knocker ball.
That would be.
We're going to put Mike inside a knocker ball on the stage to keep him safe.
That would be fine. Whatever. I'm in.
I'm going to stack 2. You get inside. If you're not already signed up for the 5K, just sign up and come and eat pancakes with me. I am not running. Just come. They have pancakes. If you sign up, you get pancakes. There's beer outside. Come have a pancake with Shane.
Oh, that's...
I don't even know what I mean, you get a free t-shirt, too, if you sign up.
First off, that if we don't get a walk-up crowd for this right now, eat a pancake with Shane. Yeah. It's the pancake breakfast. Shane's going to be there.
Oh, I'll be there.
I believe it's called yogging. The J is silent.
Yeah.
But I will be there as well, emceeing, cheering people
registration
along.
Registration link is closed, but you can walk up and register that day. It's going to cost you maybe $10 more.
Yep.
Still going to get a t-shirt, still going to get a pancake.
I mean, what more could you want?
And then we'll sit there and yell at people running. Like, what are you doing?
Faster!
Although I brought the trophy in today.
Don't let somebody Shane Willis you.
If I pass you when running. Like, Pavel Kabita must have felt terrible. I'm going to call everyone Pav when they run by. I brought the trophy in this morning. It is, I'm not going to lie to you. If you win, the winner of this race, I'm going to come on stage so we can present it to him.
Oh,
that's how
big
it is. Both of us have to carry it.
Really?
It's as tall as me. It's all obnoxious. Right.
I can't wait for that then. I knew there was a trophy presentation.
It's made out of Marty Nature's hockey sticks. Like, it's huge.
Oh, this is going to be, all right. Look at that.
So if you're on the line,
if you're
bring
on
your
the
A
fence.
Game.
Yes. If you're on the fence now, we'll see you Sunday morning.
You'll either be awarded with a trophy or a pancake.
It's a win-win, any way you look at it. That'll do it for this edition of the Canes Cast. Shane Willis, thanks so very much for joining us.
Thank you, my friend. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.